Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. We continue listening to the celebrated peace activist Kathy Kelly. She spoke in 2009 in upstate New York on America's wars of choice, especially in Afghanistan and Pakistan. It has been 2 years since she spoke, and nothing much has changed in the interim. The wars have only intensified under Obama's leadership. Kelly practices a different style of embedding. While reporters from Network News embed themselves among American troops, with predictable results, Kelly and some colleagues embed themselves among the everyday people trying to live in a war zone. She has done this many times in Iraq, in Gaza, in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and elsewhere. This yields a somewhat different perspective on war, a perspective you won't see on TV. Well, possibly local cable access, if you're lucky. This week, Kelly concludes her main talk with the Irish ballad, "Johnny, We Hardly Knew You." The ballad graphically shows the sorrows of war, many of which have afflicted the returned veteran of the title, Johnny. Kelly talks about a plan to have citizens lobby their congresspersons against our wars, beginning in January. Just a reminder that this particular effort took place 2 years ago. We missed it. Still, there's nothing stopping us from doing this now, on our own, now is there? Here's Kathy Kelly, wrapping up the first part of her talk on the sorrows of war.
The idea that wars are successful, it escapes the sorrow. War is counterproductive. It's futile. It doesn't solve problems. And in the United States today, we don't have the moral authority to be waging these wars. We don't have the financial ability to wage these wars, and we don't have the military resources. But even if we did, we're at that point where I believe if we push and push hard, just as slavery went into the dustbin of history, we can send war into the dustbin of history. We can be the people who start that movement for the grandchildren you love and say this is the end of war, but it requires our sorrow. You know, there's a song that was written, "When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah." And maybe we all sang it when we were kids. But it was predated by an earlier song, an Irish ballad that sang about the tragedy and the sorrow of war. And I'd like to just spend a little time with that ballad tonight. I should have made copies for everybody, but I'll ask you just to allow me to take part of that song with you tonight. With your drums and guns, and guns and drums, hurroo, hurroo. With your guns and drums and drums and guns, hurroo, hurroo. With your guns and drums and drums and guns, the enemy nearly slew you. Oh, my darling dear, you look so queer, Johnny, we hardly knew you. Where are your eyes that look so mild? Hurroo, hurroo. Where are your eyes that look so mild? Hurroo, hurroo. Where are your eyes that look so mild? Before my heart you first beguiled, oh, why did you run from me and the child? Johnny, we hardly knew you." And it goes on, verse after verse. A returned soldier has lost his legs, lost his arms, lost an eye. And sometimes the returned soldiers are close to losing their minds. They know the sorrow of war. And we too, I believe, know it. And so when we think of Jane Ann Phillips's line, "The planes always come, like planets on rotation, a timed bloodletting with different excuses. Our role, our job as adults, is to go to the leaders on Capitol Hill, make sure we get to the university leaders, the high school leaders, the principals, the priests, make sure we get to the community leaders, the media leaders, and let them know that we know there is no excuse. I invite you so sincerely to join our peaceable assembly campaign plans. We want to assemble peaceably in elected representatives' offices, and we invite you to come and join us in Washington, D.C. anytime between January 19th and February 2nd. And that's a stretch of time when President Barack Obama will be preparing his State of the Union address, when the Obama administration will have been in power for 1 year, and when on February 2nd the new defense authorization spending bill will be introduced into the Congress and the Senate. And I believe that the amount of money that we can afford, the amount of United States productivity and wealth that we can afford to meet the costs of war, the $3.2 trillion that Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Bilmes say that ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan will cost, the amount is zero. So let us put our lives in alignment with our deepest beliefs, with what we are privileged to have been taught, many of us, in our earlier years. Put our lives in alignment with those beliefs. Have a great commitment to the children who can't quite take action right now. You can't tell the six-year-olds to sort it out. And let's bind ourselves together to know that there is no excuse for war and that we can be a people of peace. Thank you very much.
Wait, don't touch that dial. Apparently, a question and answer session followed. I say apparently because the recording does not capture the questions. And what Kelly composes is not answers, really, but beautifully crafted and moving stories about current affairs and about U.S. policies. She speaks eloquently of Martin Luther King's great speech at Riverside Church against the Vietnam War. She shows how, in Afghanistan, poverty is a far bigger threat to women and children than the Taliban. She shows how the American military machine is not producing national security, but instead is building empire. She begins by talking about Operation Cast Lead. You'll recall that this was the massive Israeli aerial and ground attack on Gaza. It continued for 3 weeks, beginning late December 2008. It ended just a few days before Obama's inauguration. It was paid for by us American taxpayers. President-elect Obama had no comment. But in Gaza, too, Kathy Kelly was on the ground during the assault. She tells us what she saw.
It happened that I was in Jenin, in the Jenin camp, when it was really reduced to rubble. And we thought, surely this is going to be caught by the news media and people are going to know that crimes against humanity were committed. But it went right off the news radar screen in days. And I was also in Lebanon in the summer of 2006 during that war. And when we saw the villages south of the Litani River, again reduced to rubble, 1,200 people killed. And I thought, this is surely going to occasion studies and reports and war crimes questions. And it went right off the radar screen. This time, although the Goldstone Report has been treated dismissively by our Congress and Senate, I don't think Gaza's going off the radar screen. George Galloway's got another convoy that's going to be coming in through Syria, entering into Gaza. Global Exchange and other groups have formed a very fine coalition with Code Pink and others to have a walk that will walk into Gaza. And that begins to mark the date when the 22-day campaign against Gaza, an air campaign, began. You know, there were 100 pre-planned targets. And of those pre-planned targets, 88 planes were assigned. The jet fuel came free of charge from the United States. And in 220 seconds, every single one of those targets were hit. A surprise attack that began 22 ensuing days of bombing, When I was there, a bomb fell and exploded once every 11 minutes from 11 until 1 in the morning, and then we could sleep until 3, and then it started again. Once every 11 minutes, you could time it. I don't know anything about military, really, but even I knew that was a Hellfire missile from an Apache helicopter. Oh, that one was a 500-pound bomb from an F-16. You could actually begin to distinguish the kinds of bombs that were being used. And then when we came out from under the bombing and went to the Shifa Hospital, I actually met a Dr. Saeed Abu Hassan, who was from the neighborhood next door to me in Chicago. And he's a Palestinian doctor who had gone to finish his studies in the Emirates, a very seasoned emergency room, ICU doctor. And so we asked him to tell us a little bit about his experiences because he was getting ready to leave. And he told us that there were people dying at their feet in pools of blood, and that as they were trying to perform the surgeries, sometimes they'd have to walk away from a patient because they were breathing in the white phosphorus fumes. And he said that the white phosphorus was like nothing he'd ever experienced before, because the necrotic tissue would develop a blackened, ashy tissue, but then if they either walked away from the patient or went to work on another part of the patient's body, these teams of surgeons, then they'd look at the tissue they just removed, and there was new blackened, necrotic, ashy tissue, because when the white phosphorus is exposed to oxygen, it continues to burn. And he told us about how he was familiar with pulling shrapnel out of people's limbs in a war zone, but that in this case, the dense inert metal explosion bombs are so strong and intense with tungsten that explodes that people's limbs were just lacerated. And I asked him, well, what should I tell people when I'm back in your neighborhood in Chicago? And he started into this tirade. He said, well, you have to tell people that people here don't have prostheses, they don't have rehab clinics, they need all of it. And then he said, no, I am completely wrong. Just you tell them American money paid for these weapons. Now, you know, a lot of times people said, look, the Palestinians were digging tunnels. You bet they were. I woke up one morning and I thought I was at the dentist's office. And then I realized, oh my God, that's a tunnel that's being dug very close to where I'm staying. We were right on the border between Egypt and Gaza. But you know, Jim and I and others, Len, we went to Iraq and we saw people after they were subjected to year after year of a comprehensive state of siege. If I could have dug a tunnel getting into Iraq, I would have clawed my way through a tunnel. You want to get what people need. And so yeah, through the tunnels, come diesel fuel. Babies, diapers, pots and pans, you name it. It's like this whole shopping system with 1,500 tunnels. Some of them have tile roofs. Some of them have pulley systems. Some of them are very primitive. And yes, maybe some Kalashnikov rifles and bullets and rocket components come through those tunnels. You'll never hear me step away from my pacifism to say that's okay. But if we were going to build a tunnel to accommodate what the United States has sent in terms of weaponry to Israel, that tunnel would have to be the size of the Grand Canyon. It would have to be the eighth wonder of the world. Can you imagine a tunnel to accommodate the D-9 bulldozers, the F-16 airplanes, the Apache helicopters, the Hellfire missiles, the 500-pound bombs? Can you imagine what kind of tunnel would have to accommodate the Joint Defense ammunition kits? What kind of tunnel you'd have to build to be able to manage the drone aircraft that the United States has jointly helped Israel to build? I haven't even started on the 200 to 400 thermonuclear weapons in Israel. It's a fragile situation, and we're arming people further and further. $30 billion the United States gave in 2007 to spend over a 10-year period. And then we gave more money to Kuwait, and then more money to Saudi Arabia. Buy weapons, so what? So we can be the world's biggest weapon exporter. 68% of the world's weapon sales coming from here, and we think we're creating national security. We're creating empire. Do you want this for your grandchildren? Of course not. That we should be hated and feared all around the world as a menace. But we can't expect the young children to sort it out. Won't they be asking us, where were you? Didn't you want to try and change it while you still could? Do we want General Petraeus as a future president? Because the military is gaining and gaining and gaining. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, it's like a demonic suction cup. You remember Madeleine Albright said, 1998, on an NBC Today news show, she was asked, would the United States invade Iraq? She said, if we have to use force, we must. We are the indispensable nation. We stand taller than others. We see further. Is that our mirror? Are we the indispensable nation? Are we always to claim exceptionalism? President Barack Obama said the United States will not tolerate the killing of innocent civilians. But we have to look in the mirror because we not only tolerate it, we pay for it, we cause it. So the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in the Beyond Vietnam speech laid it out for us in the Riverside Parish Church. He subtitled his speech, A Time to Break Silence. He called on people to love the Viet Cong. To love the Viet Cong. How do you do that? You look for the humanity in your adversary, and you try to see yourself as you're seen by your adversary. And you try to practice a neighborliness that goes beyond neighborhood, state, nation, and race. That's what he called us to do. And so we have to try to see ourselves as we're seen by the Taliban groups. We have to try to see the humanity in these Taliban groups. And I think it means try to take a good, square, direct look at poverty. And if people tell us that you're going to abandon the women, well, when you take that good, square look at poverty, there are women today whose husbands are in Taliban groups or in prisons or have already been killed, or maybe they don't know where they are. And so it's a woman alone with children, and she's poor, she can't read. How is she going to get money into the home? So some of the women make rugs. They weave on looms all day long. But when they do that, they can't afford daycare or nursery care for the children. They have to keep the children quiet so they can work, so they can feed the children. And they give the children opium. 44% of Afghanistan's children suffer from stunted growth. 33% of the children aged 1 to 3 are underweight. They're going to bed hungry at night. Now, if we want to feed and get clean water, if we want to care for these, our neighbors, we can't let Boeing and Lockheed and Martin Marietta and General Electric and General Dynamics and Raytheon and all the companies that make these huge profits, we can't do both. You can't feed God and mammon. We can't keep on feeding this military. It'll suck you dry. You can't keep doing it and still have a sustainable world. We know the terrors we face. Environmental degradation, scarcity of water, depletion of fossil fuels, global climate change. We need the scientists to get right on those problems, not to be building more drones. You know, this new generation of drones they're talking about can release bees. And the bees are so tiny, these robotic bees can come in through your window and explode. Do we think other countries aren't going to get their hands on this kind of technology? Do we think this is enhancing our national security? Could I just ask George and Judy to stand up? Look at the t-shirts they're wearing. Ground the drones, and if you don't mind turning around, lest we reap the whirlwind. Thank you, George and Judy, who came out to Creech Air Force Base and vigiled, and Judy got arrested, and we've got vigils going on in Syracuse because they're bringing drone technology to Hancock Field, so near to you. And November 15th, there's a chance to gather people for a regional action. There's so many opportunities to stand up, speak up. Why is the Bagram prison doubling in size? They're building the Bagram prison where prisoners have less rights than in Guantanamo. Why are they bringing in so many new prisoners and doubling it in size? And what kind of oversight will there be inside that prison? And has he seen Taxi to the Dark Side about the previous history of that prison? And I think to ask him, why it is that we're supposed to be spending $4 billion a month, and that if, in fact, the United States moves in the direction of arming and equipping an Afghan security, police, and military apparatus, this will cost the taxpayers $4 billion every year just for that. And why should we be the ones who are creating a military authoritarian governance in another country? You know, we created the Mujahideen 30 years ago. We gave them the weapons. We built their training camps. We trained them. And now they've got their weapons aimed back at us. Do we think the Iraqis are going to love us so much after we starve their children that 30 years from now, if they get their hands on enough weaponry, they might not want to shoot us? It's called blowback by some people. It's a horrible word. I don't like it. But I like the idea of peacemaking, where we deliberately say, we don't want empire, we don't want it so badly, we want to live more simply. I've tried to stay off planes as best I can. I mean, I know every megabus route, Amtrak, you name it, it's kind of a drag, but, you know, this is what we have to do, live more simply, share our resources, ask other countries, what's the price for your fossil fuels? They're yours. What's a fair price? And if we think the price is too high, we use less. I wonder if the international community isn't trying to give our community a leg up, saying, look, you know, a lot of energy and money was spent to put Barack Obama into the White House. And now he's facing off with generals and major companies with huge amounts of leverage. And maybe even our efforts that, you know, got him into office in the first place, and people are kind of wearied and tired out, but I think we should think the people that are under the bombs are a lot more weary and tired out than we are. But maybe there's an international heave-ho that could help President Barack Obama stay with some fundamental truths, which I think he does believe in. I would not want to see him be a one-term president, but I do believe that if there's no public option, and if the war in Afghanistan continues, I don't think he'll succeed. And I'm very worried about the idea that the Republicans themselves may be anxious about Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and some of these folks might put forward General Petraeus. And then we would have a military, industrial, congressional, media complex more pronounced than what we already have. I want to push the pacifist option, at least amongst those who are part of faith-based groups. That much we can expect. I mean, the idea that the Vatican right now is preoccupying itself with what the nuns have done, without learning from what the nuns have done. They never showed the slightest interest in acquiring personal wealth. They shared belongings in common. They served the poor. They lived exemplary lives. And the Vatican leadership is concentrating on, I don't know, taking their real estate or something. I don't know what they're trying to do with that investigation. But they haven't spoken out in a pronounced and a clear way to say we can put an end to war. And so I think, you know, we ought ourselves to hold on to the peacemaking brief, if you will. And I don't think the militarists will ever, ever be able to solve our problems because so much of their energy goes into designing and carrying out projects meant to destroy buildings and kill people and contribute toward that spiraling rate of violence.
Oh, I'm sounding drums of war, said the man at his desk. Oh, I will not fight your war, said the child, and he stood, and he stood, and he stood, and we're with. Said the child, and he stood. Oh, but don't you love your country? Said the man at his desk. Yes, I do, but you don't. Said the child, and he stood. And he stood, and he stood. And twill well that he stood. I do, but you don't. Said the child, and he stood. Said the man at his desk. Yes, you lie and call it truth. Said the child, and he stood, and he stood, and he stood, and twere well that he's done. You lie and call it truth, said the child, and he stood.
Oh, you must be scared to die,
said the man at his desk. Oh, I'm prepared, and you're scared, said the child, and he stood. And he stood, and he stood, and twere well that he stood. I'm prepared, and you're scared, said the child, and he stood. Child, and he stood, and he stood, and he stood, and twere well that he stood. It's bringing you to hell, said the child, and he stood. It's bringing you to hell, said the child, and he stood.
Kathy Kelly is a founder and a director of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Check them out at vcnv.org. One might say that's Victor, Charlie, November, Victor. vcnv.org. Thanks again to Wilton Vaught, who in fact did put Kelly's speech on local access cable TV, and also on the internet. Check out his public affairs videos at essentialdissent.blogspot.com. Our own show is right around the corner at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Check out our pretty pictures, great links, and free archive of this and past shows. You'll find my email address there too, and your comments on our shows are most welcome. Once again, the address is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. New World Notes is produced at the East of the River Satellite Studios and Skunk Works of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Our motto is in Latin that is so bad it has its own Wikipedia entry, I kid you not. But we like it anyway, so illegitimi non carborundum. Give peace a chance. And please come back next week. Ciao.